Dunsey. Welcome to the Métis Voices Radio with your host, Dale Haggerty, speaking to you from the Jif Métis Museum, located in beautiful Raving Bee, British Columbia, Canada, every Friday night, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And now, sit back and relax and enjoy Dale Haggerty.
Let's say welcome everyone, especially our mothers, Narkukum, which means grandmother, our Machip word for the day. This is a tribute to call to all the mothers on Mother's Day weekend. Tonight I have the privilege of introducing to you my guest, longtime good friend, elder, and a mother, and also a Kukum, Teresa Dion. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you. Thanks for all the good wishes. Okay.
Well, how are you tonight?
Pardon?
How are you tonight?
Now it's my turn?
Yeah, you're just a little bit nervous, but that's okay. Don't worry about it.
No, I'm not worried. I don't know where to start. That's all. Okay. Where to start? Am I started now?
You're started right now. So, Teresa, where were you originally from?
Oh my goodness. I was born in Alberta a long time ago. That I'm not telling.
I figured you were going to say that.
Going on 48.
Were you born?
No, I was born in Alberta in a small town named of Gun. Gun, Alberta. It was just a village, I guess you could call it. It was actually a lot of meat there. I guess the people that came west thought it was a good place to settle, so that's where they were, and it was a good place to settle. It's by a nice lake there, and it was... it's mostly farming around there, but it was not huge farms. It was just small farms. The soil wasn't actually the best for all kinds of grains or anything like that. You just had to try it out and see what was going to come up the best, I guess, for a while until you knew what to plant. But it was okay. We had a lot of fun there. It was... we had a school a mile and a half away from our house, and in the winter time, it was a long, cold walk, but it was okay. It was healthy. We were never very often very ill or anything like that, because, and it's a good thing, too, because we didn't have any doctors in our area, real doctors, nor did we have any hospital or anything like that. Nothing. We had our own people to depend on. We had people that knew medicines. It was all natural medicines. You go out to the woods and you pick out what you needed for a certain kind of a... You have a cough or a cold or whatever is wrong with you. The medicine ladies, medicine man always knew what kind of herb to get. And so we never lost very many people that way, for sure. And what else did we do? Well, there was hunting and fishing, and that's how we survived mostly. And what else can I say? We've done a lot of ice skating because we had the whole lake to skate on when it was froze over in the winter.
What lake was it, Teresa?
It was Lexington.
What's the name of the lake?
Lexington.
Lexington,
and it still got that name today after all these years that it's 100-and-some years old since people were going there, and the Aboriginal people, well, people call them Aboriginal now. I don't know if we were Métis at that time. people keep moving us around. I never know what we are, really. What are we going to be next year? You never know what they're going to call us. But anyway, we were Native people. They used to come as far north as you can possibly come. And they would come in wagon and horse and buggy, horse and whichever way they could come. Sometimes they would be lucky and get somebody that had a big truck, and they'd all pool their money and have the truck bring them down. Oh, it was a wonderful sight. And then when they were getting closer to the site where they were, where the masses would be, it was a beautiful outdoor church we had, and it was like a pavilion. It just had a roof, and one side was closed in for where the altar was. The rest was all open, seats right across the whole thing. It was just a wonderful feeling when you were there. And there was this big mass happening, and you know, it was really, really nice. And they still have that. As a matter of fact, I was out there last year. So I haven't been. We never used to miss a mass out there because we were living quite not too far away from there. But since I moved to British Columbia here, I don't get out there very often. It's a long walk. No, I'm just kidding. No, I have been out there a few times. And because I still have a sister out. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I was just going to say that if it would have been a long walk. It would have been a lot of moccasin wearing out if you would have had to walk from where you live now, eh?
There were people, I should say, that used to walk from Edmonton, which was 48 miles. On the surface, it was a hard surface, and that's a long walk. And you're not kidding. Their moccasins—they used to wear moccasins, and their moccasins had holes in them by the time they arrived. It was a long walk, but they did. That was their contribution to. Sometime it was to help another person that was very ill, and you're asking the spirits to heal them, which they did many times. There was crutches and canes and stuff hanging on the wall for those that came ill and went home without them, if you could believe that. And it was true. We've seen that happen. Yeah, it was really a great place, and it's still going strong. As a matter of fact,
I was going to say that did all the family attend all these gatherings? It was like how many Métis families would have just roughly, how many Métis families do you think would have attended one of these, you know, when you were quite young? There was...
How many families?
100, 300?
Oh, that's quite a large space of several acres, and I'm not quite up to that as far as the size of the space. It was really, really big. And they've even taken in another acre or two or three in the past while because it was getting too small for the people that go out there.
Wow.
Because they go out now. Yeah, it's really amazing how many people come out there. But it's a wonderful place to go. You spend your time in doing whatever you want to do, and you have to take something to accommodate you for a few days. Like, you have to have some place to sleep, and you can use whatever you have. Sometimes people use tents, and in the past while, the people have been, I guess, a little better off or something, I don't know, but you see motorhomes sometime out there, and vans, and all this stuff, less tents now than there used to be.
Yeah.
So that's good. Yes, it, well, sometime it rains while you're out there, and you get your tent get wet, your bedding gets wet, and oh man, that's what it's about though, that you're out there to suffer a little, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, just to see how really much you really want to be there. You know, you won't leave if it's pouring rain and you're sopping wet. You still go to mass and you still do all the things that you would do if it wasn't raining. And that's about all of that. And we have it's just a beautiful thing to watch.
It sounds wonderful, Teresa.
Yeah, it still is. You have the priests are all dressed, and then they have other like helpers and stuff, and they're all dressed, and it's just gorgeous. Yeah, really nice. Anyway,
what else did we do?
We had a lot of fiddlers and guitar players around all over the place there, and I don't know, you can have a party happen in as soon as the fiddle comes out or you're partying. It was good. The people all celebrated together. There was never a problem, hardly ever. It was always a happy place to be.
Yeah. So listen, you were talking about natural medicines. Did your family use natural medicines?
Did who?
Did your mom provide you with natural medicines?
Well, you know, when you're a youngster and you have the opportunity to learn all this stuff, because there were a lot of medicine people around there, and when you're young, you don't really appreciate it, I guess, or you don't really know exactly what you should be learning. In my case, I wished I would have paid more attention to what they were doing, and I know some, but not as much as I would like to have learned from them, because they used to treat people no matter what was the matter with them, and they'd get better. I don't know how they done it, but they did. There was one lady out there, she was, I don't know her background so much, because she didn't really live that close to where we lived, but she just knew just about any medicine there was to help a person when they were ill. Just unbelievable how she was able to do that.
Wow.
And it was so nice to see. Well, we had to have somebody like that, I guess. The good Lord gave those people to us because we had no doctors. So, you know, it was really good to have these people. And there was not only the ladies, there was men. There was good men, were good medicine people as well. They knew a lot of medicine. Actually, they used to, when they would go out hunting, they would keep care of whatever, they would pay attention to the areas that had the medicine that we would have, be using eventually. If we didn't need it today, we'll need it another day. And then they would remember where all this stuff was. And so when they needed it, they would go know exactly where to go pick it. It was just, yeah, it was amazing. Those people were amazing. I don't know how they managed to learn so much. Who did they learn from? Where did they get it from? I don't know.
Do you think they might have got things just generations passed on to them? And that's probably how they learned to find what medicines would help you, possibly, eh?
Well, I think they learned from each other, you know. Somebody knew how to deal with some kind of illness that the other person didn't know. They would come, they would travel all day if they had to go to your house if you needed them at your house. And they all came by horse and wagon. There was no such things as cars and anything like that. We weren't that lucky. But it was a nice life. And in wintertime, we had enough little hills around our place that the boys, my brothers, had two brothers older than me, and they used to make skis. They made a couple pair of skis and put some strappings on so you could put your foot in it and then you'd go down this hill. And when I'd come home from school, the first thing I would do is go grab the skis and go skating for a while. Oh, I never did become a good skier, though. Oh, dear. But anyway, it was fun. We had a dog named Towser. I don't know whoever named that dog Towser. He was a beautiful dog. He was such a nice personality. And we used to hitch him up. He used to pull the sled, which the boys made as well. They made a sled. And we'd hitch him. They made the harness, our dad helping them. And we'd drive him down to the village, which was another mile, a little over a mile, to go and get groceries. Instead of hitching up the horses to a sleigh or something like that, we'd just hitch our little doggy up and we'd go and get 100 pounds of flour and he'd haul it home for us and other things. Am I losing you yet?
Oh no! This is really, I really am enjoying these stories, and I'm sure our viewers and listeners are really enjoying these stories. This is stuff that, you know, that this is the only way we learn from when you talk like this and you tell us these stories and stuff. This is how I learn, you know, how it was in them days, you know, because I'm too young to experience them days, and it's nice to hear that. It's nice to hear that it was good times in those days. I know it was tough times, but it was also good times, mm-hmm. And I like to hear the good times.
Yeah, it was great. We used to always have, we didn't have a church in our little village. We used to hold mass. There was a priest that used to come from the town next to us, and there was a church there. So instead of us going to the church every Sunday, he would come to our village. He'd say his mass over there, and then he'd come to our village. He went to several villages on a Sunday, and he had a car, lucky he, and they used to hold mass at our uncle's place, like our ma's brother's place, and they would have to, because they only had a two-room big log house, two-room, but it was big, And but that was part their bedroom, and then the other room part was the kitchen and dining room and all that stuff. So when it was Sunday, our turn to have a mass, our aunts and uncle would have to take all their bedding apart, take the beds apart, fold up the bedding, and take all the beds out, and bring in this homemade altar. And our ma used to make all the altar, you know, the nice cloths, lace cloths and stuff like that you lay over the altar.
Wow.
And the candles and stuff like that, she's attend to all that. That was our ma. And then everybody would come to Mass, and people used to come to Mass from, quite a few miles away. They would come also in the winter, come horse and buggy horse and sleigh. And in the summertime, they would come in the wagon and horses. So we always had enough people to have a good Mass there. Other than that, what did we do? I don't know. We had, in our little town, we had a train station and a train and a, I don't know I forget what you call the people that keep care of the freight and stuff that comes in. And what else did we have? We had a grain elevator with a person looking after that. We had two grocery stores, and I don't know if they done any competition or not. I was too young at that time to notice anything like that. Because if I had to go get groceries, I just had to go get what Ma said we needed, and then I had to get home because there's work to do. When we live on a farm, you work from 6 in the morning till you go to bed at night. Oh, boy. Anyway, that's about it, I guess.
Your last name is Dion. There's a famous Dion. Is he a relative? His name is Joseph Dion?
That's our dad's cousin. He's the fellow that wrote the book.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he's your
cousin. Pardon?
He said he's your dad's cousin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about him, if you know a little bit about him.
I didn't know too much about him because he lived up in the northern part of Alberta most of the time. He's the one that started the Métis movement because there was nothing for the Métis people that there was no funding of any kind, there was no schools, there was no nothing for them, especially further north. Well, around our, we had a school, but it was just an elementary school. But when you went further north, they had nothing. They didn't even have that. So he started a movement to get the Métis organized. And then he started a school. You know, just he was a teacher apparently, because he must have, because when you read his writings and stuff like that, you could tell he was not exactly, didn't know what he was talking about. He was quite knowledgeable about a lot of things. And anyway, when he got his school started and he started getting more students than he planned on, I guess. I don't know how many he planned on, but he sure got some. And then he had to get somebody else to take over the Métis movement for him. And that was when it was this Norris. What was his name? I must remember
Malcolm,
his
Malcolm
name.
Malcolm Norris?
Pardon?
It was Malcolm Norris and Jim Brady.
Malcolm Norris, and then there was another guy. I can't
Jim
remember
Brady?
His name either. What happened to my book? I had a book here, but, you know, people borrow it, and people don't bring it back.
Yeah.
So I haven't got it.
I think his name was Jim Brady.
Brady.
Is that right?
Jim Brady.
Right?
Yes, you're right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they took it over. That's why everybody says that they started it. No, they did not start it. It was John Dion that started it. And he continued with the school until he got, I don't know what was the matter with him. He got ill for somehow or other. I don't know what it was. And then he eventually just died from that, whatever it was bothering him. There wasn't too much said about what was his, what he was ailing from. I really don't know that. That's why I'd like to get another book. If you ever find one, let me know. And other than that, we used to have a lot of hockey. The guys, like, there was little towns all around, maybe 7-8 miles apart or something like that. And we had this.
Lisa, there's somebody.
What?
Is there somebody online? Have you got a question? Your name?
Oh.
Hello? Is there somebody
yes,
online?
Hello?
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 Hi,
this
what's
is
your
Sheena
name?
From, my name's Sheena.
Hi, Sheena.
From Surrey?
From Surrey, Sheena.
Yeah.
How are you tonight?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. You know who I'm talking to, don't you?
No.
Yeah.
Sheena from Services.
From where?
I've got long brown hair. Yeah, from Surrey.
Go ahead. What's your question?
I'm in the Children of the Rainbow Drum Group.
I really don't know who you are.
With
do I know you?
Yeah, she's with the Nadine's group with the drummers. Sheena, her
oh,
name
yeah.
is.
Yeah, how old are you?
14.
Oh, I see. Okay.
What's your question,
yeah.
Sheena?
I don't really have a question. I just wanted to say that, all the Aboriginal programs in the Lower Mainland are being shut down in the secondary schools.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I know I'm not going to be in it next year, but, like, it's really helped me a lot. But they're, like, all closing it down and that. And we've got, like, a really good teacher in Kwantlen and that. And she might be out of a job next year.
Wow.
Hmm.
So what you need to tell the people out there?
That the group that the Sakai program should really stay because we're really working. Like last year, they never really helped us. And we always got like super easy work. And this teacher that we have this year is changing everything around. And all the other teachers that go by our classroom, they're just like, they always see us with our heads down and our pens to our papers and that. But like last year, we were totally bad because of the teacher, right? So. And it's really sad to see the thing go.
Well, what you're saying, and if the people in Surrey, that they need to keep this program going for our Aboriginal kids.
Yeah.
That would, Tina?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's really sad, though. Because those people that are coming behind me, they really need it in that, too.
Yeah, so in other
and, like,
words,
some people
doing you think we should be writing the school board in Surrey to tell them to keep these programs going?
Yeah.
What do you think?
What program would you need?
In all the secondary schools, that they're closing down all the Aboriginal programs in the secondary schools.
Really?
Yeah. And there's a, and then it's all in Surrey, and then there's a elementary school program, the Eagle Feather program, is being closed down too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they give a reason?
Not really. Like, I know that at Queen Elizabeth, there's only 3 students in the Aboriginal program, but in the Sakai program at the Kwantlen Park, it's really working in that, because our teacher is making sure that we are all passing that, and they said that she had a meeting with them, and they said there's nothing that they can do. And that they just decided to close it all down.
Oh, yeah. Who's the coordinator for the Surrey Aboriginal program?
Well, the teacher is Ms.
Did they not pull that out of the school? Out of all the schools? The Aboriginal program that they had there for a while?
Yeah, they're pulling them all out.
Yeah, that's what I
had
heard.
They want the Aboriginal students to graduate, and they're basically shutting them all down. So, like, why are they shutting it down when they want us to graduate and that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're just going to have to write a letter to the Surrey School Board and tell them that, you know, this is our problem, that if they don't want to teach the Aboriginal program, then they shouldn't get the money that they're getting for it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they pulled it because they're not getting any money. I don't know. I haven't been involved in that for quite some time, so I really don't know what they're doing. But I could call Angus and find out. And,
okay.
He should know because he's still teaching in the school, as far as I know.
Well, there you go, Gina. There you go.
Okay.
You got your elder back working again.
Thank you.
You just jumped the program ahead, because that was going to be one of my next questions. There you go, Gina. Is there anything else you need to say?
Thank you for listening and trying to help.
Yes, you know what, Gina? Anytime, we need our youth today to say that if they need the education that we need and have an equal opportunity out there, then I agree. Then they shouldn't be shutting programs down where they're not supposed to be shutting programs down. This is for an equal opportunity, and I agree.
Yeah, well, last year at Kwantlen, it wasn't really working, but this year the teacher's really making us work, and she's, like, really making us work in that, and she just wants us to graduate in that. And the last year, the teacher, he didn't really care, but, like, yeah, this teacher this year, she's turning everything around. And she asks us what we want to do and that, and then she's like, well, if you want to do that, then you've got to graduate and maybe go to school after high school. So, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, Sheena, now that you can, you know who you can depend on, you can phone your elder, Teresa, and she can let you know what's going on. How's that?
Okay.
If you want to, like, if you're interested in the culture part only, you can, there are things happening at Métis Family Services in the evening. I know they have Cree lessons. I'm not sure the time, but you could always call Métis Family Services. They have several other things going, and I'm not even certain of all the things they're having, because I haven't been able to go to any, but I wanted to go to the Cree classes, but I haven't been able to because of, you know, like I have had hurt my ankle, and I still can't walk all that well. So, that's why I haven't been doing things with the school and stuff. And I haven't been doing that much with Native Family Services either, because I usually have things happening there. Like I was teaching the dancing, the Métis dancing and stuff like that. But I can't do that anymore. But somebody is. There's somebody there teaching it, and I don't know who it is. But if you want to learn things like that, just call the office, and they'll just ask them what they have going as far as the culture goes, and they will tell you right away. The person that's teaching the Cree class is he speaks Cree very well. It's the language they spoke at home, so he's very good at it. I wished I could speak as well as he could. And if there's anything else there, they'll let you know that if you're interested in it. I know they got singing classes. And I think Nadine holds her drumming classes there too, doesn't she?
Yeah, at the back of Métis Family Services.
Yeah. Were you at that evening that she had all the little drummers there? Were you there?
Yeah, I'm in the drum group.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, she is part of the drum group.
Did you enjoy the big boy that was dancing jig?
Yeah, I did this. Yeah,
oh, man, could he dance, eh?
Goodness,
yeah. His whole family dances. His brothers and all those all dance. They can
really
dance so well. How did you like the hoop dancer?
Oh, I love the hoop dancing.
Yeah, wasn't he neat? I enjoyed him, too. It's really good. He was really, really was really active anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Sheena. We'll make sure this message gets out to you, and then we'll see what we can do for you at this end. How's that?
Okay. Thank you
for calling in.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
So, Teresa,
yes.
I remember Sheena now, since I was part of the Métis family group there. She went to our camp. She went to the, she has a little sister, and her and her little sister came to our Métis camp that time out in Shim and Cookham's camp with Bob and I. And she was there with her sister, So you actually know her quite well. It's just you can't put a picture to her face right now, but you do know who she is. So
I can't even remember names. She has a brother.
Yeah, she has a brother. Remember Rosemary? She was teaching. She was teaching the course that Rosemary was teaching. What was that called?
Yeah.
What was that called? That she was helping them. I've got me tongue tied right now. But she has a brother that he needed. It's for attention deficit. OSI. Yeah, remember. And Rosemary was teaching her brother to go to these classes. I think Sheena and them did too as well. They're from the Sharp family. Yeah. Anyways, Teresa, getting back to the Joseph Dionne error. Yeah. So I'm sorry I interrupted you, but there's a little button that goes beep beep beep, and it means there's a caller at the end. So continue your story with Joseph Dionne. You got to get your train of thought.
There isn't much more for me to say other than that there. When we had Lou Riel organization going this year, there was a fellow that was actually very closely related to him. He was from central BC, and I think it was from the Kelowna or somewhere that this fellow belonged to an organization out there. I wasn't familiar with the organization. He's the one that I got more information from him about John than anybody else, because it was part of his family.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised.
Excuse me, there's another caller on the line. Caller, come
here.
In. Hi. And what's your name?
I'm getting a lot of it's not clear whoever's speaking. I can't get the voice is kind of muffled.
Yeah, it's Derek. That's why. Derek, go ahead. What's your question, Derek?
Well, it's not the question. The young girl was talking about they're taking the Aboriginal education from the schools.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
In reply to that, what they should do is contact the mayor, Diane Watts, because she can do something to create the effect of Aboriginal programs for the kids in school.
Well,
okay.
So they need to write a letter to her, because she can help create the Aboriginal programs come back. What's happening is that they are changing programs from Aboriginal programs. They feel that the children aren't learning anything from it, or they feel that it's not going to do any good. And so now they're bringing in other cultures to teach. They want to teach South Asian programs and other types of programs besides Aboriginal programming.
But what are they bringing in instead of the Aboriginal?
What I've heard, they're bringing in East Indian programs to teach. To teach their culture. East Indian culture. Some of that, as well as other things. They're downsizing the funding.
Of course.
We've had great, when the kids have their powwows in school, in the schools, it helps them understand responsibility, because they are participating in it. And that's the reason why this whole thing is happening. But for some reason, we have some people that may have followed more of a religious belief system, and they feel that it's not necessary to grant any Aboriginal programs. They feel it could be religious, so to speak, connected to that.
Excuse me, who's speaking now? I didn't get the name. Who was
it's
speaking?
Derek. It's
who?
Derek.
Derek.
It's me, Teresa. Yeah.
Oh, he's been to school too. Okay. Okay, Derek.
What's happening too, my dear, is that, like I was mentioned about the young girl, she wants to learn how to dance and stuff. Now, I mean, you were mentioned about Métis Family Services teaching. The person that's teaching Cree language is Kenny Owasis, who's from Burrard Nation. And He's the one that's teaching Gray.
I thought he was from Saskatchewan somewhere.
No, he's from the North Burrard area. He runs Sweat Lodge.
I think he just lives there, but I think the Hawassa's family is from Saskatchewan. I was pretty sure about that. Yeah.
Well, most likely, yeah, but he lives up in, for as I understand, everybody lives up, mostly Hawassa's family lives up in North Burrard area.
Yeah, that's because they can live on the reserves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have to, I think what we better do is, I think we better look into this program and see if there is anything left of it in the schools. Because I had heard quite some time ago, shortly after we, Rose and myself, resigned from from the thing that we were doing, just actually meeting and trying to find out what would be best in the school. And then it was shortly after that they released the Aboriginal peoples. I was going to say teachers because they weren't teachers. They were just people from the community. And then they released them because they said it was like picking up a lot of money. Well, I guess it did because they were paying them pretty good. But a lot of those people they hired did not have the, all have the, well, they weren't teachers, so it was kind of hard for them to try and fit in the culture in along with the regular school. So I guess maybe they just kind of gave it up. I don't really know why it ended because I had already left by that time. I just felt that I was not lending anything to the program because when we were at these meetings, it was just the same thing over and over and over again. I never seemed to come up with anything that was going to help the kids any. And I don't know if you, and then if somebody would, you know, suggest something that would help the Aboriginal kids, at least we hoped it would, then they wouldn't use it anyway. So I don't know. It was kind of a hard thing to try and get anything done there. So I just felt that I was wasting my time there, and I had a lot of other things that I could do to help the kids in the schools, and that was when I started trying to find place for the kids that were having a problem in school with their schoolwork. Then I was trying to find them a place to like a school that they would be more comfortable in. And I managed to get several of the students into the different classes and different schools, and they've done really well. So I was very pleased about that. And and then from there I went to the just going to the school as an elder. And I felt that because I was doing a one-on-one with the different students, the different grades, different ages and stuff, and I felt that that was a lot more helpful to the student than it was trying to, like they were doing at that other place where they had these, trying to teach the whole class something. And it was hard for the instructors, and it was hard for the teachers, and it was hard for the students. So how much the students got out of that, I don't really know. But I know that they did when I changed my my schools there, and I started going to the school. They were giving me the students that were, I don't know. I think what the student needed was just somebody to have a little understanding of who they are and what their problem was. And I had this one girl, and she was grade 7, and she just couldn't do her work. She couldn't read. She couldn't do so many things. Not that she couldn't. I think that she didn't try. So I sat down with her day after day after day, and we read and we told stories and talked about the story of what we were reading and stuff like that. And do you know something? They were going to set her back in another school, which would have set her back several years almost. And I talked to one of the other teachers there and told her this. She could actually do the work. It's just she needed less pressure on her to get it done, you know. And then she didn't only finish reading a lot of the stuff that we were supposed to read. She also was writing a story. She showed me one day. She wanted me to read it, see if I liked it, and it was an excellent story. It was only a couple pages, but that was more than I really would have expected from her. She was doing real well. And then that was the end of that, and then they cut us off. They cut off that elders program. Why? I don't know, but that's what they did. And there was no explanation for it. We had a meeting with all these people that, were in that position to put you there and take you out. So I don't know. I never was told the reason for it. Not that it mattered to me so much, except that I missed the kids, and I knew that I could help. You know, some others there. There was a couple other kids there that I was working with, and they were doing really good. So, you know, it's kind of a shame that they can't have more time. But then there's so many kids that they would need so many people if they have to have a one-on-one. So it would cost quite a bit. So that's how we ended that one.
Yeah. Oh, there you go, Teresa. There you go. There you and Derek can look into it. You're committee members, and you can look into see what's going on there, attend some of those meetings, and use your vocal voice to see what's going on. I mean, I was always under the understanding that the provincial government funds the Aboriginal program. Well, if that's the case, where is this money coming? And where is it going? If it's going into general revenue and they're not teaching the programs, there's got to be an accountability for this. And I think this is what we have, you guys got to look into right now. I've always complained that the school boards have too much power.
That's how we got involved in the first place, was that money that was supposed to go to the Aboriginal students was actually going to general revenue.
Yeah.
And then when we confronted the treasurer, he would not answer us. There were three of us. It was Rose, myself, and another fellow, he's not around now. He's actually moved away, and I haven't seen him for years. But anyway, there were three of us, and we met with the treasurer, and he would not give us an answer. He would not give us anything written. He would not even talk to us.
I think this is where I have to say that you guys, you and Derek, should get together and discuss this a little bit further. But I have to say thank you, Teresa, for being on this program and visiting with all of us and sharing your life. And I want to wish you a happy Mother's Day. And I'd like to thank the callers, Derek and Serena, for calling in tonight. And I also would like to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, our directors and sponsors of the BBS Radio, for allowing us to present this program to you. Thank you, guys, and we'll catch you on the next week, Friday, the May 16th. Our guest will be Ron Kurz. He's with the Vancouver Community Métis Association in Vancouver, BC, as well as being very much involved with the Walk Bravely Forward Society. And I have a few more minutes there to say thank you, Teresa.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes.
I would like to have you
on our program in the future, if you don't mind.
I really enjoyed giving the youngsters some background on our culture, because there's so much of our culture that isn't happening in any of the organizations. And I think it's a good thing for the youngsters to know our culture. It's something to be proud of. It's a wonderful culture. And
it sure is.
It's just nice to know who you are and where you're going. And there's all this talk about you can't be a Métis until you join an organization. Well, I think I just don't understand the connection between joining an organization and being a Métis. So does that mean I'm not a Métis because I don't belong to an organization? And I think that's a lot of smoke and mirror, because I was born a Métis, I come from a Métis community, you can't be any more Métis than that. And I always was a Métis, and I always will be. So I don't think you can take my birthright away from me.
I just don't
think that can happen.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So please tune in next week, same time, starting 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Have a good week. Take care. Marcy. We'll talk to you later, Teresa.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.